Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw Burlington Business Park Tullamore, supplier of New Holland's tractors in the Midlands. WORshaw.ie.
Good evening and welcome to Country Life here on Midlands 103. It's MJ Cleary with you for the next hour, bringing you the latest from the Midlands and further afield from the worlds of agriculture, food and agribusiness. Now, thank you all for joining me this evening and welcome to the programme. Rough weather on the way down this evening here to the station. A lot of rain the last few days and it shows no signs of abating until the weekend at least. Saturday and Sunday look to be better days. People will be anxious for some dry weather next week in advance of slurry spreading. It'll be a busy, busy time as always when the window opens. Now on to this evening's programme, and the launch of a giant state-backed forestry investment fund could increase competition for land and price farmers out of the market. This is what the farm organisations are saying. The Irish Strategic Forestry Fund aims to drive returns for investors through the growth and sale of 12,000 hectares of timber, and also accessing hundreds of millions of forestry funding from the Department of Agriculture. With more on this later, Claire McCormack, Westmead woman and journalist with the Farming Independent, joins me. Later I will be speaking to Brendan Guinan. He's running a successful and profitable farming enterprise just a mile outside Port Laois. However, Brendan is farming in a completely different manner than you would initially suspect. He farms 26 acres of forestry where he has cattle, pigs and poultry. He's selling direct to the public through his Fear Via brand, and he has in excess of 200 customers. It's going so well that he's giving up his day job to focus solely on the business. A real success story and shows what you can do from a small holding. I'll be speaking to Brendan later on the programme. Adam Woods from the Irish Farmers Journal will join me later to give an overview of the beef trade for 2022 and what we can expect for 2023. With soya currently coming in at over €600 a tonne, what will that mean for concentrates this spring? And will there be an appetite out there for dairy calves? And that's going to be happening, obviously, as we know. What are we, 11th of January, just a few weeks' time, calves are going to be hitting the ground on dairy farms throughout the country. And will there be a market for them? That is the question. As always, please text the show with your comments, thoughts or questions to 083 3010 103. Now, to start this evening, I'm glad to be joined by Minister Martin Hayden. Minister, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Good evening, MJ, and happy new year to you and your listeners.
Many happy returns, Minister. And as we know, look, your responsibilities in your post are R&D, farm safety and new market development. And it's that area of new market development we'll speak on first. So with news of the reopening of the Chinese market, can we go back in time a little, Minister, and ask just a little bit on the background of this to refresh people's memories. When did we first gain access to China for beef? When did it stop? And what's in store in the future in relation to this market?
Yes, MJ, this is something we've worked on over the last 2.5 years. It's been a top priority for me in my role of New Market Development and Minister with Responsibility for Trade in the Department of Agriculture. We first gained access for Irish beef into the Chinese market back in April 2018 and very quickly built a momentum there. There was a really good demand for Irish beef. And just to put the kind of momentum into context, in 2019, which was the first full year and the only full year we've had of Irish beef into the Chinese market, we exported €96 million worth of Irish beef. And that is half of all of our exports outside of the EU and the UK, which remain our two main markets. So it really was, in a first full year, a really significant amount of trade. What happened in May 2020 was that there was an isolated case of atypical BSE in an animal here in Ireland. That can happen. Just to maybe remind your listeners, there are two types of BSE. There is classical BSE, which is contracted or got through feed. And then there's atypical that can happen very randomly, sporadically, in much older cattle and very randomly and not often at all. But there is no risk to that. There is no risk to the food chain. That animal never entered the food chain and there was no risk. And as part of our protocol with the Chinese, we notified them of this atypical case. There was a suspension of our trade, as we would have expected, but we had hoped that that would be for a much shorter time period. We answered every question that they had. We engaged diplomatically at all levels. I had numerous meetings with the Chinese ambassador and we fought very hard to get our access back into China. Unfortunately, it took 2.5 years, but finally now we received confirmation last week that we are back in now. And great credit is due to my market access team in Dublin and the department, but also our team in the embassy in Beijing. Ambassador Anne Derwin there is a former official from the Department of Agriculture, and our agricultural attaché on the ground did great work. So we're back in now, and now it's about, building back up that momentum straight away. Borbia and the team in Shanghai office have been working at maintaining relationships, and we work very closely with industry now, and I would hope to be on the trade mission out to China later this year now as well to work with industry to make sure we can get those individual relationships back up and running as quickly as possible to the benefit of Irish beef farmers.
In relation to the trade out there then, Minister, are we talking high-spec supermarkets or is it into restaurants? What type of cuts are they looking for out in China? What can we expect in relation to demand?
Yeah, so like they have a very specific spec that is challenging for industry, but it's it shows the high level of calibre of the market as well. We export frozen boneless beef from animals under 30 months of age to China, and we had over 20 plants and cold stores registered for export to China right across the country. Some of them will need to be re-registered, but that's not an arduous task. That's something that I would expect to be done quite quickly. So, you know, industry is ready here to hit the ground running, and there are favourable market conditions in China. As we know, China itself is reopening now, and the Chinese people are getting to live their lives back more normally now than they have been for the last 3 years. And that's really important from our perspective, because the food service sector was where most commonly Irish beef was sold in the food service sector. And as you know, as their economy opens back up, that food service sector is going to be big demand there and big opportunities. So it's a really opportune time, as I say, to be getting back in there. And now it's about driving on with those relationships and supporting industry to create those opportunities that ultimately just give us extra options of markets for our Irish world-class grass-fed beef. And the more options we have, the better price we can look to get for the product that ultimately is to the benefit of Irish farmers.
Speaking about exports, Minister, figures out today show 16.7 billion, the highest figure ever recorded for our exports. So huge, huge, huge number. But for 2023, we are seeing different rules coming into play. The nitrates derogation going from 250 down to 220. The banding on dairy cows is moving. There's the slurry exporting is going to become more challenging. A lot of these are being mooted by people as essentially a cap on numbers without actually telling farmers there is a cap on numbers. So all of these rules are being put into place. You're not saying to farmers that they're going to have to limit stock or limit the amount of cattle they have or even destock a little. However, that seems to be what we are at the moment. So how can we maintain our high level of exports with a less amount of stock? Is it possible?
So, well, first of all, just to say, like, the growth in our food and drink export and the value of it is not by accident. It has been part of successive 10-year plans. We started with Food Harvest 2020. We then had Foodwise 2025. And every 5 years, we renew that 10-year plan. And we now have Food Vision 2030. And when we started with Food Harvest 2020, back in about 2012 with Simon Coveney, you know, the value of our Irish food and drink exports at the turn of that decade was about €8 billion. We have now more than doubled that. And our ambition under Food Vision 2030 is to get that up to over €20 billion worth in trade. And we're well on track to surpass that target. But the target in taking a food systems approach is about increasing the value. Because some farmers listening to this will admit that, yes, we have increased the value of our exports, of our food and drink out of the country. But not every farmer has benefited from that. The hamster wheel has got busier and has spun more, but not every farmer benefited to that tune. So what we really are focused on now is value and increasing the value of those exports as opposed to just quantity. So that can be done. Look, you talk about nitrates derogation. I think we'd need a whole program here to go into the different challenges that are concerning farmers. But just to make the point on nitrates derogation, that is an exemption from the rules of the 170 kg limit. And it's a really important exception to the rules that we can have up to 250 in certain cases where farmers meet that criteria. And we fought very hard to get an extension to that. We have a good water quality in Ireland, but it is declining in areas, and that trend has got to be reversed. And if we don't look after, you know, the environment in which is all around us, and if we don't have an improving story to tell in terms of our biodiversity, in terms of our emissions, you know, that'll affect the markets we're selling into, because all of these markets that that I fight to get us into, that we talk about in terms of trade, they all have a high level of ambition. Their customers all want to a story around how we're producing that food more efficiently into the future. We can do that, but we do have it does make changes. It means change to how we produce that food, and you know we're going to support farmers in that change through CAP, through acre scheme, through the different measures there to support farmers, whether it's strong cooperation from the tillage side, the different support schemes that are in place there. But we are in a decade of remarkable change in our food system, but but agriculture and farmers have proven themselves to be very resilient in the past, and I believe they will be so into the future again.
Do you feel, Minister, that farmers will be able to maintain current stocking levels going forward?
Like, that's a very broad statement in terms of all the different enterprises and all.
Well, let's say just dairy farming. Say a highly stocked dairy farmer who's in derogation at the moment. Will that dairy farmer be able to maintain current levels of production? I can't see how they will with the way the rules are changing.
So again, like if you look at the challenges around the nitrate derogation, there a highly stocked farmer, you know, who's in derogation, it does depend on the water quality in their catchment area, and if that is declining, then they, you know, they may well have to drop to 220, and you know, we'll have to reverse that decline in the water quality, because this exemption and the nitrous derogation, there's countries all over Europe that don't have it. There's only four countries left that have it, including ourselves. Other countries will give their right arm for it, and if we don't mind it, we'll lose it, and we'll be back to 170, and then you'll be talking a whole different ballgame in terms of stocking rates. So it is too broad a question to answer in one simple way, but absolutely, you know, farmers will continue to have their main activity will be producing the top quality food and drink and materials for that that we produce in this country. But you know, we will have to do that while also reducing the emissions profile from the food production system. You know, adopting the new initiatives that are there on a wide scale, from low emission slurry spreading, use of protected urea, all of these different elements. Whether it's the emission side, whether it's the biodiversity piece, that is a key part of our business model now, and it's going to have to be into the future. And I know how hard that is. I'm a farmer myself in South Kildare, a beef and tillage, relatively small holding here with my wife. I know this change isn't easy, but I do believe we can navigate it, and I believe there's opportunities in some of this change as well, particularly on the renewable side. And part of our job in the department from a policy perspective is making sure we can develop those opportunities from solar, from anaerobic digestion, to make sure that there's an income stream for farmers from that activity as well, while always having their primary role of being to continue to produce that top quality food that they do.
Yeah, and as you say, Minister, we could spend the entire hour talking about this. Just a word before you go on the acre scheme. A huge amount of farmers applied for it, and obviously it's going to be massively oversubscribed. What is going to happen to the farmers who fall outside of the ambit? Will everyone get in? Will some be left out? Any news on it first?
So, look, we're working really hard there. This is a great problem to have. You know, there's plenty of people predicting that there'll be no interest in acres. I never believed that for a minute. And, you know, farmers have proven with their ambition here that they are up for, you know, taking on measures and farming in ways that is more environmentally friendly. I think it's a great news story to tell, and it really puts it up to us in the Department of Agriculture to make sure that we get as many of those farmers in as possible. We also have to be mindful as ministers when officials warn us that, you know, systems and computer systems and new systems are all challenging to have a huge amount of people in at one time. As if you recall, with GLOSS and with AOS, farmers came out with them in different tranches and phases previously, and there wasn't this cliff edge where everybody was leaving one agri-environmental scheme and starting a new one on the same day. That is a big challenge for us, and we do want to make sure that the system works well and for farmers, and that every farmer gets paid that's in it later this year when they expect to. And that's our main focus here, is to make sure that we can create those extra spaces and that it works seamlessly. That is a very big undertaking, and we're just working through the logistics of that now. We hope to have clarity for farmers in the very near future.
Yeah, well, once you do your best, Minister, because a lot of farmers will be very disappointed, and not only disappointed, it is a main area of income for the lowly stocked farmers and smaller farmers, so it's a really important thing. Minister, I'm going to say many thanks for joining me this evening on the programme, and we'll talk to you again here on Country Life.
Thank you, MJ.
Mr. Martin Hayden there, Minister for State for the Department of Agriculture. And good news there on the Chinese entry again of beef. And it is an interesting one. The frozen boneless beef is what they are after. And hopefully that will also help the cause of the Banagher meat plant, which was specifically set up, or the plan is to have it specifically set up for the Chinese market. And we will do a little bit of investigating on that over the course of the next couple of weeks and see where it is at the moment. But definitely no harm. The Chinese market is open in relation to that, which would be great news for farmers here in the Midlands. Adam Woods from the Irish Farmers Journal joins me. Adam, happy new year. Many thanks for joining me here on the programme.
Same to you. Thanks for having me on, MJ.
Adam, we will look back on 2022 from a beef perspective in a moment. But before we do, your headline on tomorrow's Irish Farmers Journal is Minister does U-turn and scraps suckler cull scheme. So there was a lot of controversy, I suppose, around this, this whole idea of having to scrap the sucklers to make way for dairy. And but now it seems to be turned around and there's a dairy exit scheme on the table. I can't see many dairy farmers leaving it at the moment, given milk prices.
No, dairy cows are making too much money at the minute, Benji. Yeah. I don't think anybody would want to get rid of dairy cows at the minute. But yeah, he's leaving that one on the table. Obviously, he consulted with farm organisations and beef processors actually lobbied quite hard against a suckler exit scheme or a suckler reduction scheme. He listened to them and he's taken them off the table for the moment. So that would have incentivised people to get out of suckler cows. I guess the backstory to this, MG, is that it's almost going to happen anyway, to be honest, because you have loads of different pressures coming in on the suckler cow there, from let it be from an acres point of view, let it be from a land rental market. Like, dairy farmers are really, really hungry for land now, and they're going to push probably suckler farmers and beef farmers out of that land rental market because they're under pressure for nitrates. You've got organics as well. That's going to lead to less suckler cows. And we actually have the modelling done this week in the Farmers Journal on the beef page, looking at about a 3.5% decline over the next 8 years will take us to about 640,000 sucklers. So even without an incentivised scheme to reduce sucklers, we're still going to lose 300,000 suckler cows over the next 8 years. So it's as I said, it's almost going to happen anyway. But yeah, it's off the table. Interesting, we carried out a survey at the weekend and it showed that 50% of farmers would be interested in the scheme. 50% of farmers said they wouldn't be interested. The most interesting part of that survey was that 94% of farmers said that if they were selling cows or thinking of selling cows, they were going to hold on and wait until see what that scheme brought. So it almost stalled people selling until he came out and made that announcement. So that announcement is very important.
Yeah, but as you say, Adam, it's going to happen anyway. So I suppose it's occurring without there being a policy there. And minister and departments are kind of saving face a little and saying, look, we're behind suckler farmers. So it's a kind of a win-win for them.
Absolutely. Look, it was politically toxic to come out to say that we're going to cull suckler cows. I guess no Minister for Agriculture would ever want to do that. And look at Charlie McConnell, look, has gotten away without doing that.
Adam, we talked about 2022 just at the start of the show, and from a beef perspective, an overview, obviously a big question, but beef farming over 2022, how would you sum it up? Were we happy, sad or indifferent?
I'd say it was a pretty steady year, MJ. Looking back today, actually, across the average price, I think we're up at 4.78. You know, we would have touched close to €6 a kilo back in June. That was an unbelievable time for beef finishers. We didn't see that coming. I guess the low point was the 4th of November. We hit 4.50. And actually, looking at prices today, we're back up 70 cents, would you believe, in the last sort of 8 weeks since the 4th of November. We're actually overtaking now the British price again. So 2022 was a pretty positive year, except for that little blip at the back end. Very positive year for exports up 12% in terms of live exports, and we've seen that mark trade. You know, it's been a really solid trade all back end. I guess beef finishers have been getting on well with their cattle, and they've been back around the ring again pretty strong, buying in those store animals. So all in all, I guess if we look at weather down the south, obviously drought would have hit hard on some farms. We were hit hard on that dairy calf beef farm at John Halley's in Cashel. Were hit, you know, hard on Tullamore as well. It would have impacted some of the weight gains on the heifers. But in terms of the northwest, up where I'm from in Cavan and on up there, look, it was a textbook year in terms of making silage, in terms of grazing cattle, in terms of grazing sheep. So all in all, I think 2022 will go down as a pretty good year. I guess in the back of our heads is the cost. And the cost of fertiliser, cost of meal, cost of energy. That's in the back of your mind all the time. But I guess on some dry stock farms, we're not as big a user maybe as other farms of those inputs. But it still was a difficult year for input costs.
Yeah, and 2023 then, obviously, we're just at the start, and the big question is going to be that of a market for dairy calves. I was speaking to a person today that said that soya is coming in at over €600 a tonne at the moment, so it's going to make concentrates more expensive again, and obviously a calf ration is going to be one of those. Milk powder is going to be up. Is there going to be a market for dairy calves this year, Adam? Because from people I'm talking to on the ground, there definitively seems to be people shying away from it, and you would have to wonder where all these calves are going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be a little bit concerned, to be honest, MJ, around this. You know, milk prices are heading for €70 a bag. You know, the calf ration is going to be north of €450 a tonne. If that puts huge costs on that rearing enterprise on the farms in terms of rearing these calves. We've got a lot of calves coming on stream again over a very short time frame. So I'd be a little bit concerned. I know we've done almost 100,000 calves in the Netherlands in 2022. Calf exports way up. that's a really, really important market. And really, even looking beyond 2023, we need to get our ducks in a row as regards IBR and our IBR policy, because our control programs we put in place across Europe, as yet we don't have a control program in Ireland. So that will take us out of those markets. And if we see 100,000 extra calves coming in on the market, we see how finely balanced supply and demand is in terms of a beef trade. We always see 2 years after a good year for live exports and calves, we see a good beef price, because it puts the supply-demand curve in the farmer's favour. So, yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned. I'd be concerned as well about people that maybe dipped their toe in the water last spring with some of these calves, seen the cost. They went into it at a very high-cost time, and they're really wondering about coming back in again. So, look, at the same principles apply. We need to get a good quality calf, and look, that isn't happening on some farms in terms of using good quality beef bulls. It is happening on some dairy farms, but we need that to improve an awful lot. And look, what I'd be saying for the future, we need to be going genotyping every calf that's born on the dairy farms. Well, we're doing that anyway on the beef farms through BDGP, but we need to start implementing that on dairy farms to make sure we know what we have, we know the genetics is there, to try and create a differential between a good calf and a bad calf, to make sure that good calf is getting rewarded and the beef farmer can make money out of that calf.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on that, Adam, to be honest with you. I think just that has to come into play sooner rather than later, and just weed out the rubbish. The current trade, Adam, were again start of January, but Burr Mart started back here in the Midlands just on Monday. Very strong trade. Can we expect more of the same for the next few weeks?
Yeah, absolutely. Roscrea, the other partner Mart in Central Auctions, Roscrea last Friday was bananas. And that's not a very maybe technical or scientific term, but it was a great trade. A lot of northern men down buying, you know, those forward cows and good quality cows. Yeah, we're seeing a real solid trade there. Prime cattle in very, very short supply. And look at the ball is at the farmer's foot there. They may be saying to farmers that are selling cattle over the next couple of weeks, you know, sell hard. You know, factories are hungry for cattle at the moment. You know, you're talking there sort of 5.10 for bullocks this week, maybe 5.20 for heifers. I've heard of 5.25. Flat deals going, you know, 10 a penny in terms of 5.50. I've heard flat on the table for Angus and Hereford heifers this week. So definitely bargain hard, price around. There's factories willing to do a lot of and bend a lot of things there in terms of transport, in terms of weights. And I think for the first, you know, 6 months of 2023, that's going to be pretty solid as regards where we're going. And I just talked to the export trade in terms of live export. That's going to add fuel to the fire as well, because I think you'll see exporters and you'll see finishers and you'll see, you know, maybe grass farmers as well locking horns around mart rings in the next couple of weeks, you know, when the grass season starts. And I think you'll see a really good trade for cattle this spring, because the beef trade is going to keep going. You know, the forecasts are pretty good, definitely for the first 6 months.
Yeah, very good, Adam. Well, fingers crossed, because it's all badly needed, as we know, given the input costs. Adam, we'll say many thanks for joining me this evening here on the programme. We'll speak to you again on Country Life.
Thanks, MJ.
Adam Woods there from the Farmers Journal, and looking at a few prices from Burr on Monday. I was keeping an eye on it on Mart bids because I had a couple of cattle in myself, but a couple of the heavier ones, there was a male cemental, 1560 euro for 595 kilos. That's 262 a kilo, so well in excess of what you get in a factory. Another huge price paid for a Charlie Cross bullock, who wasn't quality assured, actually, out of interest, just shy of 700 kilos, 695 kilos, went 1980 euro. That's 285 a kilo. So again, huge money being paid, and I thought that one was going to make the 2000, but it just stopped short. I had some store cattle in myself, some Angus and some Whitehead, mix of bulls and heifers. Weight disappointed me slightly, actually. They were in around 370, 380 kilos, but averaged in around 250 a kilo, which was the best price I received in 2020 and over 2023. Now, but it was best price received in 2022 by a long shot, and a serious amount up on 8-9 weeks ago. And as Adam said, the factory trade is up 70 cent in 8 weeks, and that is indicative of the mart trade as well. Mart trade is well up. Now we're going to break, but just before we do, watched a movie last night, very interesting one, I must say, and there was a farming related theme to it. It's called On Colleen Kuhn, and it is the means quiet girl in Irish. It's the highest grossing Irish movie of all time. It's after making over €1 million in Ireland, and I think multiples of that in the UK. And there's talk of it being nominated for an Oscar. It's about a little girl who ended up spending a summer on a dairy farm with a couple who had no children themselves, and she ended up melting their hearts, and she ended up becoming part of the family. A really, really good one. And if you have a bit of time over the course of the next week or two before the busy spring starts, it's one I'd highly recommend. And as I said, a good farming element to it. Now we're moving on to forestry and investment funds and how they're going to be involved in this market. And we have Claire McCormack on the line. Claire, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thanks for the invitation, MJ.
You're more than welcome, Claire. So the headline on yesterday's Indo, a piece you wrote, was investment fund to price farmers out of land market. So it doesn't sound like good news. Can you give us a little bit of an overview here, Claire? What exactly is happening, please?
Yeah, so basically what's happening is you have Caoilte basically teaming up with a British investment fund and they're looking to finance forestry investment in Ireland. And that they've brought in a fund from the UK called Gresham House. They're an asset manager and they're basically going to help attract in investors, both foreign and Irish, to the tune of €200 million to establish a portfolio of 12,000 hectares of forestry in Ireland. Throughout the country. And so far they have €35 million in investment brought in from the Irish Strategic Investment Fund and another €10 million from Irish investors. But the rest of that €165 million, that'll have to come from Irish and international foreign investors. So it's created, you know, a good bit of angst and concern among the farming community, and particularly in the last few days since it was announced, which was on Friday, because as your listeners are aware, you know, one of the big issues around forestry development in Ireland has been, you know, foreign investors coming into the market and pricing farmers out. And, you know, obviously the licensing crisis has been a huge problem here for the last few years. So the big concerns now from farmers are, you know, being priced out of the market here, that this fund that's coming in, it's called the Irish Strategic Forestry Fund, and it'll be able to access grants and premiums that farmers can access as well. But this fund will be able to access, you know, hundreds of millions. Like, I know, like, at least, you know, you're talking €180 million, at least that, in grants and premium from the Irish Forestry Programme, which otherwise, you know, farmers could be getting, I suppose, which would be great for local economies and all that. So it's a developing issue. You know, people are still trying to kind of come to grips with what this is going to look like, but that's what the announcement was anyways. So that's where we're at. So Caoilte will manage these forests, the 12,000 hectares, and the fund will own the land.
Yeah, I suppose from the outset, Claire, when I'm just hearing it with fresh ears, if you will, not being involved in it, that these funds exist to make money. So obviously they see the ability to make a profit in Irish forestry, and I'm presuming the new payments which are going to be available for 2023 are part of this. So it's part of it is a good news for forestry, as in, look, if there is 12,000 hectares, there's going to be lots of jobs, lots of people involved, lots of people employed and whatnot. The bad news is then that if the fund's involved, they're going to drive up the price. But I suppose, like, it is a free country, as in, you know, we're in a free market. You can come in, you can do you know, what you want commercially, essentially, once you're not breaking any rules or any competition rules. The fact that Caoilte are involved is the part I would be guessing is probably souring it a little bit for the farm organisations.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it is an open economy, absolutely. But yeah, Caoilte's involvement, that they're teaming up here with this UK-based asset manager, Gresham House, that is leaving a bad taste at the moment, because the arguments are that, you know, Caoilte has been, you know, has had solid returns for the last couple of years, and strong returns again for 2022, they say. So, you know, the question is, could Caoilte not, you know, fund it themselves and keep the land in state ownership, in Irish ownership? So that has been a big barrier now, a developing barrier. And also, you know, just this competition in the marketplace for land as well, and pushing up prices. And you know, land is already difficult to buy at the moment, and even in more, say, they're saying that a lot of this might happen around the Midlands, the West, Northwest, the Southwest, and that they'll be the regions that are targeted, which will make it even more difficult, you know, to get the land in those areas. But it's Cuailnge coming out and saying this won't be the case, that they're not in this to create more competition in the land market, and that's not what this is about, that this is about increasing forest cover here. We have a long-term target of 18% forest cover, and which means 450,000 hectares of new forest, and that this fund is designed to basically, you know, get the forestry numbers up. But despite that, you know, I spoke to a lot of farmers this evening just ahead of coming on the show, and you know, there's like words such as, you know, very disappointed, angry, there's a lot of disquiet there, you know, that farmers are very disappointed to be only hearing about this now, that it's not good enough, that it hasn't been properly thought through. And the whole issue of the local economy, you know, losing out on the money that could be generated from the grants and premium is a big problem, because the new forestry program that has come in, $1.3 billion, that, you know, farmers, if you want to encourage a greater culture of forestry in Ireland, I suppose farmers want to really be at the centre of that. And this message so early on in the introduction of this new programme is definitely not a good start from the farmer trust, farmer confidence perspective, because we've had so many issues with the forestry licences here. You know, like, we're meant to be planting 8,000 hectares of new trees every year, according to the programme for government. But, you know, we're only scratching the surface of that, you know, 2,000 hectares or that for the last few years. We've missed the targets 4 years in a row. So in order to get greater levels of planting going here from the farming community and the farmers are the biggest landowners in the country, you know, you need to, I suppose, focus more on the farmer planting, you know. And so this move so early on now, I don't think this issue is going to go away.
No, I don't think so, Claire. As you said, a great rundown on it, but it doesn't seem to be the wisest way of getting forestry planted. And also, just when you're saying those figures, 450,000 hectares to be planted, the 12,000 I thought was a big number, let alone the 450,000. It's going to be very hard to get their hands on this land in general, just given the amount of money in Darien at the moment. They're the biggest players, and they're not going to be letting land go. And then in order to, you know, get this land for planting, like, where's it going to come from? People aren't selling because leasing is so valuable at the moment. So it's a kind of a circular thing. And as you said, it's definitely not going to go away. But on that, Claire, I'm going to say many thanks for joining me this evening. I'm just out of time, and we will have you back on the show in the not too distant future. Many thanks for speaking to us this evening.
Thanks very much, MJ.
Claire McCormick there from the Farmers Journal. So farm organisations not happy about that. Cuailnge getting involved with an investment fund, and we will see how that goes. But the biggest issue there is going to be getting their hands on the land, regardless of what person or fund is involved with it. Very hard to get your hands on Irish farmland, and indeed hard to get your hands on it to plant. Now, we are going to a break, but before we go to a break, I came across something interesting over the weekend. I was reading one of the Sunday papers, and it had a piece about the Volkswagen Amarok. And Volkswagen and Ford are working together to produce their latest commercial vehicles. I thought this was very interesting, and I thought it was very clever by two of the largest car manufacturers in the world. But the agreement involves Volkswagen taking the development lead on the Caddy and the Tourneo and the Kinect, so the small van range, while Ford has charge of the mid-size van range, the Transit and the Next Transporter, which I thought was a really clever way of doing it. So instead of going up against each other, they're going to say, listen, we'll do the small vans, you do the big vans, and we'll let the market then decide. People will buy the ones they want. And it was a really interesting way of two large companies working together as opposed to working opposite one another. And I suppose it's just something I saw, and I said to myself, that kind of thought process is interesting, And it's all about productivity and working smarter, not harder. Now, just text in from a listener. Is it worth investing so much in reopening and developing the Chinese market when at the blink of an eye, the market can be shut again if another atypical BSE case shows up? And it is a very good point. No question about it. I suppose we have to hope it doesn't happen. But yeah, it could happen just so easily. Now we are moving on. And I have Brendan Guinan on the line from Fear Via Farm in County Laois. Brendan, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
How are you, MJ?
We're going good, Brendan. I came across you in an article in the Farming Indo yesterday, but look, you've been on the go a while. You're selling your wares direct from your farm, but it's not a typical farm. Can you give us a little bit of background on the enterprise, please, Brendan? What exactly, where are you farming? What's the system? How long have you been at it?
Yeah, thanks for the call. We're 3 years into, we're the only 100% biological agroforest farm in Ireland. So biological means we promote life, so we don't use any chemicals or sprays or herbicides or antibiotics, dewormers, anything like that, and any of the animals or the land. And then agroforestry means we farm through trees. So it's basically a balance between the forestry, giving the animals and the plants shelter, but not too much shelter that nothing will grow underneath. So we thin out the forestry enough to create sun traps and microclimates for the animals and plants to grow, basically.
Yeah, and the question I have, I suppose, Brendan, when we think of a forest, we think of the forestry floor, not the best environment, I think, for growing grass. But look, I don't know much about this. So what are the animals eating? What are they surviving on?
Yeah, well, we use the animals to clear the forestry floor of briars and nettles and any invasive species. And from that, then, between thinning the canopy to let more light down, the organic matter being built up from the animals and the animals actually clearing forest floor, we kind of try to waken the latent seed bank that's in the forestry floor already. Plus we add some ryegrass, some red and white clover, we sowed barley, we sowed potatoes, so lots of different things over the last couple of years to see what would grow and how it would work with the natural environment that's there. So yeah, the animals did a lot of the work.
What did you find grew best, Brendan?
Well, lots of old grasses, lots of like clover. We've red and white clover that actually natural clover that just grew itself. That comes back year after year. We've sold radishes. We sold like the radishes took up a lot of the excess nutrients right, during the summer from the planned holisticism that we do. So we move the animals daily and sometimes twice a day through the forest, the electric fences, same with the pigs, the cattle, the poultry, all that kind of stuff. So we hit an area hard, and then we move on before pathogens and worms build up, you know, so that's why we don't need to dose our animals. It's all down to management, basically.
Yeah, you're on a rotational system, without doubt. Yep. You're known for, obviously, look, you're different animals, but pigs being the big one. Can you explain to us a little bit about the pig part of the enterprise and how you're selling that then direct?
Yeah, well, the pigs, most people think they're very destructive to land, but actually, if you control them properly, they're incredibly regenerative because they can dig, they can... like especially invasive species, they don't just clear off the top. They dig down into the soil, they pull out all the roots, and two or three rotations of that clears hogweed. It will basically clean out your paddocks without needing Roundup or any sprays. And then the organic matter they leave behind helps to build microbial life in the soil. And then we sell everything. This is a big part of it now. It wouldn't work unless we direct sold our produce. So we sell in taste. So we use local butchers, Michael Healy in Banagher, does all the pigs for us. We do gluten-free sausages, dry-cured bacon and hams. We do pulled pork. But pure meat, we don't use any preservatives on it. We he flash freezes everything as soon as it's packed, and that's our preservative. So there's no nitrates in it. It's very health food. It's not really an ordinary sausage. And then we sell in taste. We didn't advertise at all. The last 4 or 5 months, people began to notice us on social media, and like I was nominated as a Food on the Edge ambassador in Airfield Gardens last year. That's where a lot of the chefs found me, and they tried out, and the product actually stands on its own 2 feet. Then, you know, when people like it, the buyers come back for more, and that's kind of where we are.
And your brand name, Brendan, your Fear Via Farm. Can you explain that to listeners, please, what it's about?
Yeah, Fear Via means true food or real food in Irish. So it's FIORBHIA farm.ie. And from that, I tried to connect with the fact that it's Irish, that if you Google regenerative food in Ireland, you see an Irish name, it comes up, you know, straight away, it's somewhere reasonably local anyway. So, and then Irish, it's our heritage, it's our, you're looking backwards in history. And what I'm doing on the farm is taking the knowledge of the past and how people farmed before chemicals, and then mix that along with latest technologies in food science and in soil management and measuring microbes and all that kind of stuff, so that we can really build a sustainable and regenerative agricultural system. Like, we sequester carbon each year. We have an open farm policy as well. So we do farm walks all the time. Actually, our next farm walk is on Saturday, the 28th of January. And you can buy tickets on Eventbrite for that now. And it is, we want people to come in, see how the place works, see how their food is actually grown, and build a relationship with individual people and provide them with health food, you know, which they can't get that quality. It's very, very difficult to get that quality reliably because food chain is so long.
Yeah, nearly impossible, Brendan. I could stay talking to you all evening. What you're doing is remarkable. 26 acres, and you've left your day job. You're at it on a full-time basis, which just is indicative of your product. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you for this evening, Brendan, and I'm going to wish you all the best with Fear Via Farm. And many thanks for joining me here on the programme.
Thanks, MJ. Thanks for the opportunity for the chat.
More than welcome. Brendan Guinan there, as I said, Fear Via Farm, and you can check him out on fearvia.ie, and that's FIORBHIA. So BH in Irish sounds like a V. So Fear Via. And there is bacon, there is beef, and there is poultry available on the website. I was looking at Brendan's website last night, and I have to say, very well done, very professional, great labelling, and as he said, all quality food there. And making a full-time living from 26 acres. Not many people doing it, but a lot of work going into it, and he's working very hard at that. So to support local, log on to fearviafarm.ie and please go ahead and pick something up. Because as we often talk about, that supply chain with the supermarket is what the problem is with a lot of Irish agriculture. And if we can support local, we can give into the local economy, and it just makes sense. Now, that is it for this evening. And I'd like to thank Brendan from Fear Via Farm. Claire McCormack from the Farming Independent spoke to me about the investment fund buying up the forestry. Adam Woods from the Farmers Journal was on earlier speaking about the beef trade for 2022 and what we can expect for 2023. And Minister Martin Hayden spoke to us at the outset about the reopening of the Chinese market and how he is working hard on acres. So fingers crossed that all farmers who applied for acres can get in this year. Now, shows repeated on Sunday morning at 7 a.m. until 8 a.m. and we are also available wherever you get your podcasts. If you type in MJ space Cleary, C-L-E-R-Y, we will pop up and you can listen at your convenience. So whether it is the Apple or Spotify or Google Play Store, we're available on them all. I will speak to you this time next week. So I'll say good night and God bless.